When you think about Sicilian wine today, the aspect of it that is so immensely apparent and right there in front is how dynamic it is. There's a lot going on there, and it's pretty amazing, and the amount of people who are interesting and doing distinctive projects is pretty amazing too. It's not always what you read about when you read about Sicily, because I feel that every synopsis of Sicilian wine is quick to lead with the immense history of the place over the centuries and the vines in the area. But I can barely keep up with what's going on there as of the last harvest, let alone the last century. I mean, the pace of development is so rapid there, it's really incredible. For instance, Cos wasn't even working with white grapes and amphora before 2008, and now that wine that they make from amphora and white grapes is already a classic of the area. Compare that kind of development to the New World. When I started with wine, the New World was where all the excitement was, where people were experimenting, and where people had open minds. Now the New World is the place where people are often sticking really close to the established styles and what their brands are thought to be in the market. Success has kept innovation from happening. Producers are afraid of alienating existing customers and aren't always sure that they're going to be able to find different customers if they try something new. Meanwhile, you have these people in Sicily who are like, "What the hell? Bring on the M4, let's do this." I mean, who's really approaching things with an open mind? To me, it sounds like all the history hasn't got these producers in Sicily stuck in place at all. It sounds more like it's an open field and very exciting times. To get in on that excitement yourself, contact the good folks at Crush Wine and Spirits. They are offering a discount on the 2013 Cos Pithos Bianco, which is that Cos wine that's raised in amphora, the white, so that the pricing to you as a listener of the show is only $28.95 instead of the normal $31.95. This is a really great time for Sicily. You should check it out. Call Crush at 212-980-9463 and use the offer code IDTTFORME, or use that same promo code online at crushwineco.com. Take advantage of some excellent pricing on the Cos Pithos Bianco. Call Crush Wine and Spirits and ask for the special deal available to podcast listeners. I'll drink to that, where we get behind the scenes of the beverage business. I'm Levy Dalton.
I'm Erin Scala.
And here's our show today.
I'm Mike Martin, Wine Director for Vinci Fine Wines in New York City, New York.
Christy Frank, Frankly Wines.
Jason Wagner, Fung Tu Restaurant.
Patrick Watson, Back Label Wine Merchants.
Mraj Vaidya, Restaurant Daniel.
Jack Mason, Marcha Restaurant.
Jessica Brown, Wine Director at the Breslin Bar and Dining Room and the John Dory Oyster Bar.
I've told you many times how great 750 is, but don't just take it from me. There are many, many buyers who are using 750 to make their lives easier every day. With access to detailed wholesale pricing, a calendar of upcoming trade tastings, and seamless connections to their sales reps. Check out 750.com for yourself and get signed up.
The interview with Giusto Accapinti that you're about to hear was made possible in large part by Martha Stuman, who helped translate. Giusto Accapinti of Cos on the show today. Hello, sir. How are you?
Giusto Accapinti di Cos, come stai?
Bene, grazie. Sono contento di essere nella bella e mitica Manhattan.
I'm doing well, thank you. I'm very happy to be in the mythical Manhattan today.
Great to have you here. So you grew up in Sicily.
Sì, sono cresciuto in Sicilia, ma sono nato in Nord Italia, in Emilia Romagna.
So, yes, I grew up in Sicily. I was born in the north in Emilia Romagna. And I, at 11 years old, my family transferred back down to Sicily.
What was your family like?
Come è stato tua famiglia?
Ah, noi siamo quattro fratelli. Ho un bel ricordo della mia infanzia perché in una famiglia numerosa.
So we were, I was one of four children, and we really had a very dynamic, fun family because of the number of children that were present. And I still have a very good relationship with my brother and sisters.
And what was Sicily like at that time?
Beh, io ho un ricordo, devo dire, quando si cresce in un posto e si cresce
When you grow up in a place
evolvendosi
and you're living in that place for a long period of time, you grow with it. So I haven't noticed as much change, perhaps, as if I had, you know.
Però in particolare era un tempo molto più semplice. Si poteva, noi ragazzi si
In many ways, it was an era that was more simple than today. We played in the street, we invented our own games. Now I see my my children, my two boys play, and I, you know, they're more at home. For me, it's a little bit sad. They play more with PlayStation. There's not this for us. The street was our playground.
What were you like as a child?
Come sei stato come un ragazzo, il attaggiamento.
Ero abbastanza monello, sì, ero un bambino molto attivo, iperattivo, come dire, un po'.
I was a pretty happy child, actually. I was pretty energetic and happy at the same time.
E penso che facevo cose anche molto pericolose. Se le vedessi fare oggi.
But I have to say, I did these things that were probably a little bit dangerous when I was little. If I saw my children doing them today, I would definitely stop them.
Sì, ma come ho detto, la strada era un po' la nostra palestra.
But as I said, the street was more or less like our gymnasium.
So really, nothing's changed. Still pretty like same
lui,
guy then.
Lui dice così niente è cambiato da te.
Sì, per certi versi è proprio così.
Yeah, in many ways it's exactly the same.
What did you desire to be as a kid? What did you want to do as a profession?
È un po' strano perché a rivedere la mia vita nel passato ho l'idea di fare l'architetto perché ho studiato.
So looking back on my choice, because I knew I wanted to be an architect, that's what I studied when I was older, I knew that I wanted to be an architect at a very young age. And perhaps when I was young, I didn't know where this desire came from. But looking back on my life, I have this very, very strong memory of watching this Gary Cooper film that we discussed yesterday a little bit. And it was about an architect.
Sì, forse anche un po' nel DNA della mia famiglia, perché mio padre è ingegnere e mia madre era anche.
And there was perhaps also an influence of my family. My father was an engineer and my mother, even though she played the piano, often did drawings.
But if you'd seen Winchester 47 instead of the Fountainhead, you could have ended up as an outlaw cowboy. Possible.
Se tu hai visto Winchester 47.
No, infatti poco fa volevo dire, io sono di una generazione che sono cresciuti con tutti i film in bianco e nero di Hollywood e devo dire, quello che mi ha colpito.
With this film in particular, I mean, he grew up in an era where they were watching all of these black and white films from Hollywood, and in particular this film, you know, this architect, he liked the way that he designed things with such rigor and without any compromises. In fact, in the end of the film, the character, the protagonist, ends up bombing this house or building that he designed because it had been changed from his initial vision and changed in a way that seemed more to be mediocre.
So you were looking for something that was transcendental, looking for something bigger, looking for something that was more closer to a personal vision of perfection.
Così tu stavi cercando qualcosa che rappresenta una visione di.
Io, se guardo la mia vita adesso, guardando indietro e le scelte che ho fatto, penso che rifarei le stesse scelte, perché l'architettura mi ha dato il modo di
entrare. Looking back on my life, I don't think I would have changed anything or made any different decisions. For me, architecture was not just about designing something to be constructed, but was about taking a thought and then giving it form. And wine is very much the same way for me. I don't just make a drink. I have a thought that then I develop into a wine.
You went to architecture school in Palermo, and what was that like?
Così tu sei frequentato.
Ho frequentato dal 77 all'83 che mi sono laureato alla scuola di l'università a Palermo. Era un bel periodo. Era un periodo anche del movimento.
When I went to architecture school, which was between 77 and 83, it was a moment in which. There was a really strong student movement. There was this desire to really filter what the professors were telling us and to to kind of make it our own. It was in many years, people call it the hot years. It was a great moment for students in Sicily.
Noi volevamo veramente cambiare un modo diverso di vivere e di progettare la città.
We really wanted to change the way that people lived and change the design of the city by virtue of that.
Who else did you meet in school?
Chi hai conosciuto in scuola?
A scuola si riferisce un po' a quello che poi...
Of all the people I met in school, one of the most important would be my future partner in winemaking, Tita. His full name is Giambattista Cilia. And really, we started the winery. We decided to found this Azienda Agricola, and we started this really, it was for fun. It was a game for us. And the first few years, you know, we foot stomped all the grapes, but it was a really... The important thing about entering into this world is that it was a virgin world. There was really not this idea of winemaking in Sicily at the time, of this type of winemaking.
Which is kind of surprising because of the historical roots of the area with wine are so long.
Mm-hmm. E questo è una sorpresa perché le radici della storia della viticoltura in Sicilia è abbastanza lungo.
Sì. La cultura della viticoltura in Sicilia è millenaria. Possiamo dire che la viticoltura moderna con i miceli.
Yeah, it's true. Viticulture in Sicily has been around for thousands of years. I mean, in terms of what we think of as modern viticulture, that happened in 800 AD. And so, you know, having this long history of viticulture, almost 3,000 years, juxtaposed with this idea of winemaking that really didn't exist until the late 70s. So when we entered the wine industry in Sicily in the early 80s, it was really to speak about wine in Sicily and in the rest of Italy was really to speak about nothing at all in terms of the modern culture of wine.
And whose idea was it to start the winery and how did that happen?
Forse proprio l'idea, Titta, andiamo a fare il vino, forse l'ho detto io, ma è chiaro che Titta...
Perhaps it was I who had the idea first, but in all honesty, you know, Tita was so excited to join in on this adventure. I mean, we were like two babies who didn't know anything, absolutely anything about wine, and so it was a great adventure.
Where did you source the grapes from?
E da dove viene le prime uve?
Il papà di Tita aveva una vecchia vigna. Che era stata piantata
nel... He said the first grapes came from a small plot of land that Tita's father owned. It was planted right after the Second World War, and it was in the old Alborello system. So for us, that is likened to head training, a slightly different pruning style, but, you know, the old head trained system. And we used those grapes at first, and then once we became, you know, more official in the eyes of the bureaucracy, we actually started leasing that vineyard, and we still lease it to this day.
What was your approach to making the wine? How did you go about processing those grapes?
Come hai cominciato a fare questo vino? Che
come tutte le cose che inizi, cerchi di... C'era un anziano...
So at first we spoke to a friend of Tita's father who really advised us in how to make wine in a way that was very, very traditional. I mean, we foot stomped everything, we pressed everything by hand. It was very, very much a traditional wine that we made that first year. And later on, this actually became something that was useful to us because what started out more or less as ignorance and not knowing how to do things and taking advice from Tita's father really became much more of a philosophical choice for us later on. So we want to make a wine based on a method of subtraction. So really one that expresses the land, because at the base of everything, that's what a wine is an expression of the land.
L'espressione della terra.
What was the reception to the wine once you made it? Who bought the wine and what was it like trying to sell it?
Dopo superata la parte divertente di fare il vino, poi ci siamo posti anche di
vendere. So, in terms of selling wine, making wine is the fun part. You get to the point where you want to, it's so much fun, you want to do it again. And to do it again, you have to empty your botte, your vessels, and put things in bottle, and you have to make money in order to continue on your business. So then comes in the sales aspect. We first started selling our wine to the local Enoteca where we drank as students in Palermo. And it was interesting because at the time, really, there was very few wines in bottle in Sicily. There was Corvo, which I see in this room today. I see a 1974. There was a handful of others. There was Marco di Bartoli, who was making wine in Marsala. But really, there were very, very few of us.
Levi, quando io ho cominciato, una bottiglia di quel Corvo costava in bottega meno di un dollaro.
When I started, really, this bottle of Corvo cost what would be equivalent of less than a dollar.
E noi abbiamo cominciato a vendere il vino dall'azienda a un dollaro e mezzo.
Mm-hmm. And so when we started selling our wine, we started selling it more like $1.50, what would be equivalent to $1.50.
Abbiamo subito iniziato cercando di dare un valore al nostro lavoro.
Yeah, we started right from the beginning to try to give a value to our product and to our wine. We thought we did a good job.
So you sold basically to the places where you used to drink as students and to other students.
Sì, così tu hai sì, cominciato a vendere i vini ai posti in cui tu hai bevuto sì. Come studenti. Yes, exactly.
Esatto.
Marco di Bartoli became a bit of a mentor for you.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that was one part that I missed a little bit about. Marco di Bartoli really, sure. Who was making wine in Marsala, who we just mentioned, he really became a mentor to me and to us. And he really changed our vision of winemaking.
Mi piace ricordare Marco anche perché è scomparso nel 2011.
Marco di Bartoli, who died in 2011, I really like talking about him. He was like a lion. He, in many ways, was, I believe the direct translation is like a tugboat. He pulled Sicily out from the fog and into the sun and was really important for the whole panorama of Sicilian wines.
And he had been a race car driver for Lancia, and he'd traveled in different parts of the world.
E lui ha fatto le corse in macchina, sì, per la Lancia, e lui ha viaggiato in tutto il mondo così.
Sì, Marco era anche vino, Marco era passione. Marco, stare con Marco è come stare sopra un'onda, riusciva a tirarti su, farti immergere, e poi quando risalivi, respiravi un'altra vita.
Marco di Bartoli is more than wine. He really is passion. Being with him is like being under a wave, and you come over the crest, you go down in the trough, and then you come back up for air, and it's really, he becomes infectious in his passion, and really
Marco ti faceva sognare.
Sì, he was a man that was very, very extraordinarily generous. And he had an imagination that was incredible. He was very much avant-garde, but had centuries. I mean, his family had centuries of history on their shoulders. So it's a beautiful mix.
And what did he tell you about wine?
Cosa lui ha detto del vino?
No, è stato proprio Marco amava il rosso, il vino rosso. Ma quindi è tutto ciò che era in qualche modo la tradizione.
So Marco, I mean, he did this in his life as a race car driver, but also in wine. He loved red wines particularly. And he, even though he followed the course of history in many ways, he was also always kind of looking to take on a challenger or an opponent in many ways to try to push the envelope. And so for us, that kind of became our mantra as well, that we also wanted to take on a challenger in our path in winemaking.
And what did that look like for you? What kind of challenge did you want to bring forward? Something more artisanal, something more handcrafted, or what was the idea?
Noi, io penso che da quando faccio vino in questi 35 anni di aver fatto tanti errori, no? Tanti errori che abbiamo anche pagato.
In my 35 years of winemaking, we've made many mistakes, some that we've ended up paying for. And we, At the base of all of this, though, we knew that we were taking the correct path in our winemaking. And that was very important because for us, wine is really a piece of land. And the idea of making wine is to become as close as you can to the pure expression of that land and to search for elegance in what land you have. And so we never went off that path, despite some of the errors we might have made.
So what was the condition of the vineyard of Tita's family? What did it look like? What was planted there?
Questa prima vigna della famiglia di Tita, come sembrava? Cosa cresciuto lì?
Allora, questa vigna, per nostra fortuna, era una contrada davvero molto vocata. Noi abbiamo mantenuto questa vigna.
Non è più... So this vineyard, it was in an area that, thankfully, fortunately for us, was a beautiful terroir. And in many ways, this, even though we've replanted the vineyard since then, since it was an old vineyard, in many ways, this vineyard really represents what the feeling of coast wines are, what it gives the feeling of what coast wines are to this day, even though we no longer use those original grapes. They've been replanted. So we went ahead and found other vineyards in the area because we really loved this terroir so much.
Ma lui anche parla delle piante che sono piantate, come erano le vigne. Sono un arborello, sì, ma anche un po' tradizionale, no?
Sì, allora, di quello che è la mia esperienza in questi anni, la cosa più importante è il terreno.
So, even though, yeah, it was an arborello, the system, that for him, really, the terroir is the most important thing, not necessarily the way, the training system or the other factors that are involved with the, you know, kind of the minutia of viticulture.
L'altro fattore importante è la resa per ettaro. Quanta uva fai fare da una vigna?
La resa per ettaro, la quantità.
Quantità di uva. Oh.
The other important factor is the quantity of grapes that you get from per hectare. So that was...
So the soil had limestone in it. It was a limestone-based soil.
Mm-hmm. La...
Il suolo fa la differenza.
Lui ha chiesto che la suola era di calcare.
Sì, noi siamo in un'area, la parte sud-orientale dell'isola. Io so che nell'immaginario tutti pensano all'isola di Sicilia, giustamente.
Yes, we are in a limestone region. Because of this, our wines are oftentimes more delicate, particularly speaking to the degree of alcohol. Many people think of Sicily as a region that has very muscular, high alcohol wines. But in fact, in our region, that's not the case. And speaking about Sicily in general, we're like a small continent. We have a diversity in geology that is perhaps unique in the world.
And what's the weather like where you are? And is that Ragusa? Is that where you are?
E come il tempo dove sei? Sei a Ragusa o...
Noi siamo nella parte sud-orientale dell'isola, è un po' la stessa latitudine di Tunisi per intenderci, quindi un clima molto secco, ventilato, siamo a 10 chilometri da una catena montuosa.
Yes, we are in the southeastern portion of Sicily, where coast is located, we're about 10 kilometers as the crow flies from the mountain chain called the Mont Ible, and about 10 kilometers as the crow flies from the sea. We're at about 250-300 meters elevation above sea level, and we have more or less the same latitude as Tunis in Tunisia, and so yes, we have a warm climate, it's well ventilated, which is very, very important for the health of the grapes. We don't have a lot of disease in the vineyard because of this climate, and it makes farming, you know, organically, biodynamically easier. And also, in terms of soil profile, this limestone soil that we have is very, very low in organic matter. So we get a minerality that perhaps other places don't get, and we don't get a high degree of sugar in our grapes.
So there's breezes that come in off the water? Is that what keeps the area dry?
Così il vento diventa da mare o questo fa la ventolazione o...
Sì, non solo il vento viene dal mare, infatti soprattutto sui nostri bianchi questo sentore salino si sente. In più era un'area pliocenica, quindi prima...
So yes, we do get winds from the ocean, and in fact, in our whites, you'll definitely be able to taste a little bit of salinity. Also, the fact that we are this uplifted seabed, it's, you know, we have this aspect of being sea before and then the sea breeze. But this is just a piece, this is our piece of territory. This is, speaking to others, you know, everyone has their own territory, and the thing that I find is most important is that people express that it's not important to try to emulate someone else in another part of the world or a style in another part of the world. It's really missing the point, because wine itself is supposed to be an expression of your territory.
So you make a number of wines, and most of them are based around grape varieties that are indigenous to Sicily, like Frappato, Nero d'Avola, Greconico, and Enzolia. And what are those grape varieties like individually? What's the difference between, say, Frappato and Nero d'Avola?
Premetto che la Sicilia ha circa 80 varietà di vitigno indigene autoctone.
So Sicily has about 80 varieties of indigenous grapes.
Tra uve rosse e uve bianche.
Between red and white grapes.
Questo perché grazie a questa cultura millenaria dell'uva.
Mm-hmm. And this is thankfully because of the thousands of years of viticulture that we've had.
In generale, la parte sud-orientale storicamente è sempre stata vocata più per le uve rosse e la parte occidentale dell'isola più per le uve bianche.
In general, Sicily has always had a history of having red grapes planted more on the eastern side of the island and white grapes more on the western side of the island.
Noi siamo nella parte sud-orientale, quindi sbilanciati culturalmente per produrre più uve rosse, quindi fare vini rossi.
So because we're located in the southeastern portion of the island, we're more predisposed to making red varieties.
È chiaro che non mancano le uve bianche o le uve rosse da una parte e dall'altra.
Uh-huh. And of course, you know, there's always red grapes in a white region and white grapes in a red region. So
il Cerasuolo di Vittoria, che il nome viene da ciliegia, Cerasuolo, Cerasa, ciliegia, è un blend di due uve fondamentali, il Nero d'Avola e il Frappato. Anzi, Frappato di Vittoria.
So Cerasuolo di Vittoria, which comes from the word cherry, Cerasuolo is the word for cherry in the dialect. It's made from two grapes, Nero d'Avola and Frappato, and the Frappato comes from Vittoria proper.
Quando noi abbiamo cominciato nella vigna, c'erano anche altre varietà di uva, perché l'agricoltore...
So when we first acquired the vineyard of Tita's father, just like everywhere else in the area, you know, the vineyard was thought of a place of fruit production, not necessarily just wine grape production. And so there were table grapes, there were white grapes, there's a mix. There's definitely Frappato Nero d'Avola, but it's something that, you know, you put together into one wine.
Questo non accadeva soltanto nel Cerasuolo. Pensiamo, non so, quando io ho cominciato a fare vino, il Chianti aveva 15 varietà di uva.
So, just like, for example, in Chianti, initially there were 15 grape varieties that you could put into a Chianti. Now, he doesn't remember well, but it's perhaps four or so grape varieties. It was the same with Cerasuolo di Vittoria, that, you know, the vineyard was a place of fruit production, and if it happened to be made into wine, then it happened to be made into wine.
Mi si apre un link e penso che è chiaro, il Chianti o il Cerasuolo di oggi è diverso da quello di 30 anni fa, appunto perché c'era una varietà più complessa di uve.
If I'm speaking to what a Cerasuolo might have been like 30 years ago, it definitely would have been different than our modern Cerasuolo. It had a more complexity, it had more grape varieties in it.
E questo per quanto riguarda tutti quei vini che sono un blend. Chiaramente non il Barolo, che è sempre stato un'uva, piuttosto che il Pinot Nero e così. Però nei territori, dove pensiamo a Bordeaux, ma prima c'era anche il Malbec, poi a poco si è
cambiato. A blend also can define a territory. It's almost like, you know, you think of Bordeaux and how the grape varieties have changed over time, but you think of Bordeaux, it's a blended wine. Same with Cerasuolo di Vittoria. And, you know, that changes over time, and there's... ampelographic changes as well. It's a dynamic thing in our territory.
Il Noi utilizziamo nel nostro vino solo nero d'Avola e frappato. Nelle proporzioni 40% frappato, 60% nero d'Avola, e lo facciamo così da sempre, senza aver mai cambiato queste proporzioni.
So in our Cerasuolo di Victoria we do 40% frappato and 60% nero d'Avola, only those two grapes, and we haven't changed the proportion since we started in 1980.
And what do those each bring to the wine?
E cosa sono i caratteri di ognuno che
Allora, il frappato è un'uva davvero fuori dal
So speaking first to the genealogy of frappato, when you start looking at kind of the family tree of wine grapes, frappato has always been a satellite. It's always been off on its own. It doesn't have a lot of links in terms of parentage or shared DNA with other grapes. And it is very unique. It's hard to compare to other grapes. Speaking about its characters, it's beautifully aromatic, not overwhelmingly so, but very likable in its aromatics. It's got a beautiful acidity, and it doesn't have a strong color. It's got an elegance, particularly grown in Victoria, where you have this climate coming from Africa. You get a huge diurnal shift, and that gives you kind of these elevated aromatics in Frappato.
Il nero d'Avola è un po' più rotondo, meno acido. Diciamo che c'è, se il frappato è più floreale, il nero d'Avola è più frutto. Devo descriverlo in maniera generale.
If I had to describe in a way that was more general, nero d'Avola is a little rounder, more structured. If you wanted to say that frappato gives you a floral aspect, nero d'Avola gives you more fruit. A little less acidity also than frappato.
Il nero d'Avola ha anche più struttura.
Mm-hmm. Yes, also more structure. Nero d'Avola has a lot more structure than frappato.
But in a way, that sounds like a pretty good marriage. Those two attributes combined. More structured wine and a more aromatic, pretty wine.
Sono d'accordo.
Yeah, he said he agrees.
How should I understand what it's capable of? I mean, Cerasuolo di Vittoria, not to speak yet of the clay version that you also make, but just normally, when should I be thinking about opening that? How long should I think about aging it before I serve it? Is it something I should decant? What is the curve of such a wine?
Grazie di questa domanda, Levi, perché è una domanda che rincorre sempre. Quanto dura un vino?
So he's saying thank you, Levi, for this question. I get this a lot, actually. And, you know, people want to know when a wine leaves the winery, it's an investment. It's also an emotional investment. So people ask me often how long a wine like this can age.
Allora, se io considero il Cerasuolo come un vino da pasto, da accompagnare nel pasto, io credo...
I think of wine, a Cerasuolo wine, as one to accompany a meal, and it's something for me that between 2 and 8 years is probably an ideal time for Cerasuolo because it starts developing these tertiary flavors and aromatics. But on the other hand, when I talk about a wine that's made, I don't want to say naturally because that evokes a whole new conversation, but in a way that is close to nature, it's like a human being. It's very much eternal. I mean, a human being might say something at 15 years and another thing at 30 years. And if, you know, the human being isn't sick at 80 years, then they'll say a whole new thing. And it's this kind of richness of experience later in life that is expressed. And so same with the wine that's made in a quote-unquote natural way. It's, for me, very eternal.
Il concetto del vino eterno, perpetuo, è un po' questa un'eredità di Marco. Marco mi ha avvicinato al vino assaggiando, non so, delle riserve 1840. Ancora mi emoziona solo il pensiero, la memoria di questi vini che Marco mi faceva assaggiare.
This idea of wine being eternal is really one that Marco kind of hadn't... It was his influence that I think this way. I mean, he had me try wines that were from 1840, and to taste something that's that old and it still makes me emotional, it's something that I understand that concept very well. And it's thanks to Marco for that.
You also do make a Ceres Volata Vittoria that's raised in clay, in amphora. And when did you come to the conclusion that amphora were interesting to you? How did that come about?
Anche fai un vino di amfora, un ceresuolo in amfora, e a quel punto nella vita tu hai capito che questo era una cosa interessante, una cosa che devi provare.
Sì, all'inizio dicevo che la nostra esperienza nasce da dilettanti.
When we started making wine, we were dilettantes. We didn't go to enology school, which perhaps is a boon for us. But we approached wine when we were young. We took a trip when we were 22, the three of us, up to Bordeaux, because that was for us what the model was.
Quindi da questa esperienza a Bordeaux abbiamo subito iniziato a usare le barrique. Però siamo stati anche tra I primi ad abbandonare.
So after this trip to Bordeaux, we started using barrels right away. And what was initially a novelty for us, all of these, you know, this patrimony of olfactory sensations was something that later on became, for us, what was boring. It was something that was overpowering. It felt like the wine had makeup or that it had, you know, had some sort of facelift or something. And that's really when we started thinking about working with amphora.
È strano perché in un momento storico per noi, in pieno successo con questa barrique, è incredibile come.
So when we first decided to stop using barrels, it was in many ways there was this. E tu hai detto che era una stress sulle spalle per usare I barrique o per non, fermare non, usare I barrique.
Dico che pure avendo in un periodo storico molto positivo dal punto di vista economico, le barrique ci davano
When we started success. Moving away from barrels, it was at a time where to use wine that had been aged in barrel was almost a guarantee of success. It was something that people looked for in wines, but for us it was just, it became repetitive. The wines became homogenized. And so when we first started using amphora in 2000, even though we were becoming tired of barrels, it was a difficult decision. The first year that we made wine in amphora, it was a disaster. We pretty much threw everything out.
Because I remember, perhaps it was wines from Coast in the late 90s, early 2000s, Nero d'Avola, and some of them had quite a bit of wood, it seemed to me. Mm-hmm. Like Labyrintho.
Lui ha detto che anche lui ricorda un momento ai fini degli anni 90 in cui, per esempio, un Nero d'Avola, forse Labyrintho, era abbastanza pieno di legno.
Sì, lo ricordo anch'io.
He said, yes, I remember it too.
Devo dire che ci si stanca della ripetibilità. Mm-hmm. Quindi
questi vini li considero. This repetition and this sameness of the wines just became tiring in many ways. It was like a cheeseburger, you know, that tastes exactly the same in every part of the world. And another thing to add is when they first started, and he said that there was the first year that they used amphora, it was a disaster, that they could see, though, underneath all of that it was the right path to take. So they continued.
So did you reach out to anyone about advice, or did you get clues on your journey with amphora that helped you understand the process better?
E tu hai parlato con qualcuno per consiglio per come si fa il vino in amphora?
Ma sì, io sono stato in Georgia quell'anno ai confini con l'Azerbaijan nel Caucaso.
He went to Georgia with a friend John, and he said that for every technique that one uses, it really has to be contextualized. And for him, going to Georgia and seeing that, you know, the saporavi that were fermented in Quevri, that it was something that kind of grounded him in the process.
You chose to get amphora from Spain, though.
Mm-hmm. Ma tu hai deciso di prendere amphora di Spagna.
Sì, siamo stati con Titta anche nel Nord Africa. A Tunisi c'è una cultura della terracotta molto importante.
Yes, Tita and I also traveled to Tunisia, where they have a really long history of terracotta, and we also saw the Georgian amphora. We visited Spain in the area of La Mancha and decided on these tinajas. And the reason for that was, that the Georgian Quevri, because of the porosity of their clay, they have to be lined with wax. And we really wanted something that was nude in many ways and that breathed perhaps like a barrel, allowed the wine to breathe. And so we chose this Spanish version in an area where they also have a long, long history of making these terracotta amphora. And it's a blend of three different types of clay, and it gives a porosity that breathes, yet you don't have to line it.
Abbiamo provato anche delle anfore siciliane, ma non... Devo dire che quelle spagnole...
So we also tried some Sicilian amphora, but in the end, the tinajas, I mean, for us, an amphora is, it's not a magic vessel. It's not something that changes a wine of that's banal into something that's interesting and complex. It's a vessel that breathes very much like a barrel, but without added oak influence. And it allows us to have a better precision in order to express our territory.
In fondo... A noi a Cos quello che ci interessa non è l'idea di un vino perfetto. Il vino perfetto è solo un concetto di moda. Oggi piace questo.
For us at Cos, the idea of a perfect wine is not one that we're aligned with. It's the idea of a perfect wine is something that's really constructed by fashion, and it's more or less like a sine wave. It comes and goes. It's pushed this direction and that direction, and really. Nature for us is perfect, and to try to convey that with a certain precision is really our goal. We're not interested in constructing a wine in the winery, much like the rest of modern winemaking. It's more conveying that perfection of nature that's really important. The only thing that a farmer has is his or her land. That's the only thing. If we move away from that, then into a world of you know, industrial winemaking, into a world where things are constructed and are moved away from that expression of land, the farmer loses everything he or she has.
So when you have white grapes in amphora and you have red grapes in amphora, is that different? Is that a different process? How does it act differently with the clay?
Quando voi fate le fermentazioni di bianchi in amfora verso quello di rosso, c'è qualcuno di differenze, c'è qualcuno... E come loro sono... La qualità di ogni fermentazione bianchi verso rosso, e ci sono differenze che l'argillo esce fuori. Mi capisci o no?
Sì. Okay. No, allora, usiamo lo stesso protocollo di lavoro, sia per i bianchi e per i rossi. Di fatto a Cosse noi...
The whites and the reds are made in amphora with this, exactly the same protocol, so fermented on their skins. We really don't change the protocol between whites and reds, but what we do for amphora fermented wine and wines that are made without additives in general is do a very, very rigorous selection process. It's like if you were to cut your hand and decided not to use antibiotics, you would have to clean that cut a lot more often and a lot more rigorously than if you were to use antibiotics. It's just the same goes for winemaking. So really have clean, healthy grapes coming into the winery and going into the fermentation. That's our work.
So are the vineyard parcels for the regular Cerisuolo di Vittoria that's in wood and the Cerisuolo di Vittoria Pithos that's in clay, are those different parcels or are they the same? Do they come from the same source?
Le particelle delle uve di Cerisuolo di Vittoria Classico, quello che è affinato in botti, sono le stesse particelle come quello di Pithos Rosso?
Sì, sono le stesse e sia il Cerisuolo Classico sia Pithos è un blend di tutta la proprietà COS.
Parlavamo in questi So yes, the Cerisuolo di Vittoria Classico, that's aged in botti, and the Pithos Rosso, that's also Cerisuolo in amphora, come from exactly the same parcels. They're a blend of our estate vineyards. But what's really beautiful about the amphora is that in each amphora, we have about 400 kilos of grapes. So really fairly small quantities. And it's beautiful for a winemaker to be able to see the differences in the soil and in the territory. It's something that, you know, we notice every foot of vineyard is different. You know, you can put your hand in one place and your hand next to it in another, and you'll have different soil types and different expressions. And so although in the end we end up blending what we have in amphora, it's a really beautiful process. It's like seeing, you know, each pixel of a picture before it's made into that entire blend.
So it's micro vinification of small lots across what you own, except that it's in amphora.
Sì, è una micro vinificazione di tutto, ma in amphora.
Levi, è proprio così. È un insieme di tante piccole vinificazioni. Il regalo dell'amphora.
That's exactly right, Levi. It's for us. It's the process of being able to see the diversity, the biodiversity that we think is there, to be able to be able to touch it in many ways. It's like, you know, like humans, it's hard to describe the diversity among brothers, among children, even though we come from the same parent, but it's something that we can actually see and touch when we do it in this way.
As wines, as finished wines, how does the Rosso Classico Cerswold of Vittoria and the Pithos Rosso, how do those differ? How do they behave differently when you drink them?
Allora, nel Cerasolo Classico, che è fermentato in vasche di cemento e poi affinato in legno, c'è tutta la...
So, the Cerasolo di Vittoria Classico is aged in large botte, so large Slavonian oak, and it does retain those characters that oak gives wine. It has a tannin that's not necessarily just the tannin of the grapes, although I have to add, just as a translator, most of these are neutral oak, but there's still a different quality to the wine, whereas the Pithos Rosso perhaps has more precision in it. It's something that what tannin is there, and sometimes there's even a little bit more tannin. What tannin is there is just that of the grapes. But for me, this discourse of what the characters are between the two wines is a little bit less important than when you drink them. The idea, wine is to be made to raise the conversation a bit. I want to make a wine that makes people want to think. And for me, that's a very important aspect of wine. It's not just to be drunk. It is meant to be drunk and enjoyed, but it's really, I want to bring a higher kind of consciousness to wine itself.
So you also make Nero d'Avola by itself and Frappato by itself. And the Frappato is fairly young vines. Mm-hmm. And sometimes a Nero d'Avola, it varies in age depending on the bottling. And what do you find as wines by themselves as opposed to being blended together?
Voi anche fate un vino di Frappato in purezza e anche un Nero d'Avola in purezza. E il Frappato viene dai viti più giovani. E qualche volta anche il Nero d'Avola, ma dipende sulla bottiglia. Secondo te, cosa espresse queste uve da sole?
Sì. Allora, poco fa dicevo che un po' il ruolo del vino è quello di portare fuori dentro una bottiglia un po' il
carattere. So deciding to make a Frappato and a Nero d'Avola in their purity, perhaps Cerasolo di Vittoria is the wine of our region, but for us, I mean, some people have said that maybe we do it because of a little bit of marketing, but it's a beautiful way to show people what the origins are of this region and of this wine. And so to try, especially trying, for example, a Nero d'Avola from Cos, because Nero d'Avola is also made all over the rest of Sicily, you can see that it has a very different profile. It's not a muscular wine where it is that way in much of the rest of the island. So it also kind of gives clues to what our territory is about.
Sometimes I find Nero d'Avola has almost a perfume on the palate more than the nose, whereas Frappato has a perfume on the nose and a more linear palate.
Lui dice che qualche volta sembra che Nero d'Avola ha un po' più profumo nella bocca invece del naso. E per lui il Frappato ha un naso più perfumato. E il Frappato anche ha una linearità sulla bocca.
Sì, condivido, sono d'accordo anch'io.
Mm. Yeah, I noticed that as well. I agree.
And then, you know, there are examples like Rosso del Cante from Reggiali, where Nero d'Avola from Sicily seems to be able to age quite a long time, 30, 40 years. Is that something you find as well for Nero d'Avola? And is it true for Frappato by itself?
In Italia, forse, o nel mondo, il vitigno più nobile dei bianchi è lo Chardonnay.
So Chardonnay is a grape that perhaps as a white grape is considered one of the most noble in our world. And on the other hand, Trebbiano is a grape that's probably considered at the lower end of the spectrum, the base grape, sort of a workhorse white grape. But for us in Italy, there's, to give you an example, Trebbiano makes one of our most important wines. And so certainly there are territories where things can be made to age longer, but it's more important to understand that a wine, I believe that a wine that is made naturally without additives is a wine that can be eternal.
Insisto su questo punto perché un po' tutti i bianchi, per esempio, da noi, o anche i rossi, modificano le acidità. Questo è un
I know I keep kind of hitting on this point over and over again, but the reason I do that in my region and in the world of wine, there seems to be this obsession with adding acid to wine, and we know that acidity is one of the things that helps wines age. And so I think in the beginning of a wine's life, a wine that has added acidity is more or less can be balanced. It's fine. But as the wine ages, a dissidence begins to be able to be felt, whereas the tartaric acid that's been added to the wine is on a different road than the wine itself. And those two things start diverging. And so that's why I say over and over again that a wine that is made without additives, that is just grapes, is eternal.
Ho detto l'esempio dell'acidità, ma avrei potuto dire dei tannini, l'aggiunta di lieviti selezionati, di tutti quei
prodotti. I use the acidity as an example, but in, you know, it could be a number of things. It could be added tannin, it could be, there are so many things that can be lawfully added to wine in our modern winemaking. I really, at the base of it, don't understand the motives.
Levi, è come avere un albero di mele nella propria giardino. Se queste mele vengono sempre brutte, per mangiarle devo mettere lo zucchero, mi devo inventare mille modi.
Levi, the idea is quite simple. If you, for example, if you had an apple tree in your garden and you didn't, every year the apples didn't quite produce what you thought was delicious, you had to always add sugar to them, then maybe you need to choose to plant a different apple tree or maybe something different in general. It's not an extremely complicated concept. It's just a matter of finding what works for your region and your territory.
So what have been the significant vintages of your career? You began in 1980. It's a partnership of three college friends. You make a bit of wine. Since then, up till now, what have been the vintages that have been difficult, that have surprised you, that have been a blessing, where things have changed? What have been the vintages that have stood out over time?
Cosa sono state le annate che hai colpito? Per un modo per dire che le annate difficili, le annate belli, le annate che ti ha dato un sorpreso.
Ah, grazie di questa domanda. Grazie perché mi capita di fare delle verticali, no? E assaggiare 35 anni della mia storia. E con sorpresa ogni volta conferma che le annate più impegnative, quelle un po' più disastrose, poi nel tempo.
So thank you for this question. For me, and I've done a, you know, we've done some verticals at the winery, tasting all the past 35 years of wines that we've made, and surprisingly, the years that I remember being the most difficult have actually over time yielded some of the most interesting and complex wines. And the years that were easy, and I don't want to say that the wines, you know, are boring, but that they lack the same complexity. And, you know, for example, last night we drank a 2003 Tempranillo Lopez de Heredia, and you could see that was a year of suffering. You could see that it was a hot year. That, I mean, not only did the people in Europe suffer, there were many deaths, but the plants themselves suffered, and that was something that you could feel in the wine, and that's the beauty of wine, that it's like a diary. It's like a diary of your life and the life of your territory, and, you know, you can feel all the different things that happened during that time. It evokes these memories in you when you taste and drink that wine. That's beautiful for me, and that's really essential to wine itself.
So how much of what you think of as a good year has to do with ripeness. How much of it is about controlling ripeness or trying to get ripeness? Is the issue in a difficult year that you have too much ripeness because of maybe too much heat, or is the issue that you don't have enough?
Per esempio, in un anno difficile per te, normalmente per dire difficile è perché le uve non sono abbastanza mature o sono meno mature che...
Per esempio, il 2014 è iniziato in maniera strana. Sembrava una vendemmia facile, per esempio. Ci siamo accorti, abbiamo iniziato la vendemmia.
We started the harvest and we had all of our workers there and everything tasted fine in the vineyard. And when the first boxes of grapes came into the winery, we tasted them and I looked at Tita and we both said, stop, stop, because the grapes weren't ready yet. And so, yeah, they were... they. Sono state acerbi o cosa?
Sì, ci sembrava sempre cruda quest'uva,
sì,
vegetale.
They seemed just a little raw, a little...
Nel mosto.
Yeah, in the must, a little bit raw, a little bit vegetal, which is bizarre. They tasted good in the vineyard. So we said stop, we sent everyone home. A week later, we started the harvest one more time. This was in 2014, and we really thought this time it was going to be good, and we were a little bit embarrassed because we had all this meat, we were doing a barbecue, and everyone who showed up we had to send home again because we said the grapes are not ready. So finally, the third time that we started harvest, we probably only had half the workers because everyone thought it was a joke. But, you know, there are years like that, definitely. But for me personally, I don't believe in good and bad years anymore. It's really... it's something that it's the history, it's the memory of a year and a period of time, and you know, some are better than others, but I don't really believe in good and bad years.
What has been the progression of the winery? You now own vineyards now, whereas you started by borrowing the produce of your friend's family's vineyard. You've moved into a different cellar. You've acquired several amphoras. You've also had partners come and partners go in terms of the ownership of the winery. So chart for me the progression of till now.
Come dicevo, Cosse nasce per gioco tra i banchi di scuola, direi, nel 1980. Tre amici.
So we started out in 1980 as three friends from school. Tita and I both graduated from architecture school in 1983. Our third partner, Strano, Cirino Strano, also nicknamed Rino, He was in medical school, so he didn't graduate until 86. Medical school was a bit longer. At that time, I mean, Cos had already been around for 6 years, and Rino decided, his father was a doctor, he had just graduated from medical school, he decided to leave the business, and his sister, Panucha Strano, took his part of the business over. And she was always hanging out with us anyway. She was a part of the Cos family, and... after that, in 1995, Panucha decided to marry, and she also decided to leave the business. So, in reality, Cos is actually Co, but we've kept the original name. And so, Tita and I have, at that point in 1995, decided to buy Panucha's shares in the company.
Per quanto riguarda invece il progetto economico finanziario, è ancora più bizzarro. Noi abbiamo iniziato mettendo a quei tempi 150.000 lire, sarebbe come...
To hear the economical history of Cos is even a little bit more bizarre. We started out as three friends with about 1,500 lira per head, so that would be the equivalent of about $200 at the time, so very, very little investment. But, you know, and we started out with about a little over 3.5 hectares of leased vineyard. And we just grew the business slowly, slowly but surely, like the old agricultural model. And now we own 36 hectares. We make about 200,000 bottles of wine each year. And we export to 52 countries. And for us, though, part of the thing that was very important as we were growing the business was the investment in the vineyard first. So... most of our money that we made went back into the vineyard. Yes, we were able to build a 400 million euro winery and estate over time, but that took us 27 years. And the the winery that, you know, they both have architecture backgrounds, Giusto and Tita, the winery that they envisioned took them 27 years to realize.
And what's next for you? What do you intend to happen in the future at COS?
E cosa la prossima passo di COS?
Ma, io, l'unica cosa che mi auguro nel futuro di COS è quello di mantenere questa idea del vino. Non, chi è, vive l'agricoltura sa che una ripetizione.
For me, the important thing for COS in the future is to really maintain this idea of wine that we've been shepherds of for so long. And the world of agriculture and the world of a farmer's life is really that of repetition. We were just joking about the fact that nature itself gives you enough novelty in life, that really just trying to navigate more or less along the same path, the same philosophy that we've had for such a long time is my goal. And also to always, you know, this feeling of adrenaline that I have every year when the harvest arrives, I hope to maintain for the rest of my life. If not, it's better if I go play golf in California, if I just retire.
Modo di dire, sì, comunque. Ma è un po'... Fare vino è, a volte anche sembra ripetitivo, no? Però è come osservare le persone che cambiano. È un po' strano, da un canto c'è questo aspetto statico, e dall'altro invece questa evoluzione.
The life of a vigneron is really, it's kind of a bizarre mix. It's very, very static in many ways. You have the same repetitive sort of tasks year in and year out, but in the end, each year is so diverse. The wines themselves, they teach you over time, and they teach you to be attentive. That's probably the number one rule of winemaking. And it's this beautiful, beautiful balance between something that's very dynamic and something that's repetitive over time as well.
For Giusto Acapinti, wine is an idea. Thank you very much for being here today.
Grazie a voi di questa bella conversazione che mi ha dato modo non solo di parlare di vino, ma un po' quella che è la visione del vino, che è l'aspetto che più mi interessa. Grazie, Levi.
Thank you, Levi, for having us and for this conversation, and really for me to be able to express the idea of wine. That's the most important thing for me to talk about, and the most exciting thing for me to talk about. Thank you.
Giusto Acapinti of COS. When you think about Sicilian wine today, the aspect of it that is so immensely apparent and right there in front is how dynamic it is. There's a lot going on there, and it's pretty amazing, and the amount of people who are interesting and doing distinctive projects is pretty amazing too. It's not always what you read about when you read about Sicily, because I feel that every synopsis of Sicilian wine is quick to lead with the immense history of the place over the centuries and the vines in the area. But I can barely keep up with what's going on there as of the last harvest, let alone the last century. I mean, the pace of development is so rapid there, it's really incredible. For instance, COS wasn't even working with white grapes and amphora before 2008, and now that wine that they make from amphora and white grapes is already a classic of the area. Compare that kind of development to the New World. When I started with wine, the New World was where all the excitement was, where people were experimenting, and where people had open minds. Now the New World is the place where people are often sticking really close to the established styles and what their brands are thought to be in the market. Success has kept innovation from happening. Producers are afraid of alienating existing customers and aren't always sure that they're going to be able to find different customers if they try something new. Meanwhile, you have these people in Sicily who are like, what the hell? Bring on the amphora. Let's do this. I mean, who's really approaching things with an open mind? To me, it sounds like all the history hasn't got these producers in Sicily stuck in place at all. It sounds more like it's an open field and very exciting times. To get in on that excitement yourself, contact the good folks at Crush Wine and Spirits. They are offering a discount on the 2013 COS Pithos Bianco, which is that COS wine that's raised in amphora, the white, so that the pricing to you as a listener of the show is only $28.95 instead of the normal $31.95. This is a really great time for Sicily. You should check it out. Call Crush at 212-980-9463 and use the offer code IDTTFORME or use that same promo code online at crushwineco.com. Take advantage of some excellent pricing on the Cos Pithos Bianco. Call Crush Wine and Spirits and ask for the special deal available to podcast listeners. Sherry Fest has started in New York, and your last chance to sign up for my seminar on June 25th is coming up pretty quick. We're going to be talking about sherry and restaurant wine programs with two of the top producers from Jerez, and it's going to be a unique opportunity to try some sherries that you never normally see in the States. The seminar is entitled Sherry and Restaurant Wine Programs, and you can buy tickets online at sherryfest.com. It's going to be June 25th at 11 a.m. at City Winery in New York, and it's going to be an exploration of sherry and how to sell it. If you'd like to be there, make a point of signing up soon, and I'll see you there. That was our show. Thanks for listening. I really want to say thanks also to the so many, many people who have left a comment in iTunes and a rating in iTunes. Thank you. I originally started asking people to do it in this segment here, and we went from about 70 something to 180 something. It's an incredible amount of change. It's a huge help to the show and getting the word out about it, and I can't thank you enough. I mean, regular listeners, famous winemakers, people I count as friends, but also just a ton of people that we've never maybe even met. But I appreciate words so much, and it means a lot. Thank you. For those of you who haven't left a comment or a rating in iTunes, if you do get a time, please, please do so. It really does help out the show in terms of our standing with iTunes and getting the word out to other people who may just never have heard of the show and may be interested in hearing about wine at a level that they're not used to finding. Otherwise, if you'd like to reach us, you can find us on Twitter at DrinkToThatPod or on Facebook. We have a Facebook fan page there. Or even on Instagram. I'm on there at Levy Opens Wine, L-E-V-I. You can also go to our website. It's alldrinktothatpod.com. You can find back episodes there. You could order up a t-shirt or a coffee mug with our logo on it. Or you could send us a donation if you'd like to. The instructions are on the website. We're always trying to keep the conversation interesting, and we appreciate that you take the time to listen. Thank you very much, and we'll see you next show. Love you.
Mind is like a parachute. If you don't open it, it's really not worth much of anything at all.